Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about reflections on a visit to Canberra, a visit that I've made. Just to put you in context, I've got to podcast and develop my mental recall and storytelling ability as part of general rehabilitation. And so what I'm going to do is tell you about this place in Australia called Canberra. I might add a bit of scientific interpretation to it, but try and tell a coherent story. So I'm going to have to assume that you've got a map of Australia. It'll be in different countries. There's a map of Australia. And on the right-hand side, or the east coast of Australia, is a city about halfway up, about a third of the way up on the main bulk of Australia, called Sydney. And Sydney is on a sort of a complex system of harbours, not to say the actual harbour. There's a harbour itself, but there's also repeated several layers up the same shape and position. If you actually look at the maps there, you'll see a series of these sort of almost fractal snowflake patterns coming out, one with the actual harbour itself, a little gap, and it builds up, and there's this fairly complicated snowflake pattern, but you'll see above and below there'll be this snowflake pattern in other harbours above and below. Botany Bay, Port Jackson, which is Sydney Harbour, and there's another harbour, Port Stephens, above it, and they're all pretty much the same sort of shape, these very intricate hills and harbours, and it's from erosion, and what's happened is the sea level's gone up, but it hasn't gone up sufficiently high for the region that we're in, the Blue Mountains. There's a fairly complex system of canyons where it's eaten through the sandstone. Just to the south of us is something called the Blue Labyrinth. I'm broadcasting from Glenbrook, which is 300 metres up in the Blue Mountains, about 70 kilometres from the shoreline of Sydney and Sydney Harbour. And this pattern is really repeated many times. So you can see large dams and inland, where they've just built a dam up and it's filmed up, and it's like an inland sea and harbour. Well, there's a bit of a difference in the sort of the main water supply is this very long linear lake, because the land has slipped. It's created a long linear fault line, and the water's gone through there and on a sort of very straight river, but everything else is all crinkly and stuff like that. So that's to position yourself here, and I'm going to give you a sort of a tour down on my holiday and a few reflections. So this is just a test, it's just my recall and storytelling ability. So we headed off initially to Canberra, which is our inland city. I'll just describe about that. So Sydney is a large city, about 5 million people. So for Southeast Asia, or for Asia, it's not a big city, but for Australia it's a big city. To give you an idea, the population of Australia, I've forgotten whether it's 30 million or 25 million. I think we've hit 25 million. So a fifth of all the people in Australia live in one city, or in two cities. In sort of like the major cities, you get over half the population sitting, living in a city, with which the sort of large affairs. And the city that we're going to go to is inland, around 300 kilometres. So the width of Australia is roughly the width of continental United States. It's 3,000 kilometres across. So about 300 kilometres inland, which is to the left as you look, there's a city called Canberra, and we'll discuss that a little bit longer. But our initial journey that I took, is with the family to deposit a daughter at a scout camp on a Shoalhaven River. So there's as I've described, everything's fairly similar geology around this area, which is sandstone, where it's been submerged big giant river, massive river, 300 kilometres wide. And as it's uplifted, the waters come across and create these things. And there's a river called the Shoalhaven River, up around where we are. It's called the Nepean River. Nepean River runs roughly north-south, which is strange because the mountain ranges run north-south. And the thing is that the river is there first and the mountain ranges has lifted up. The river plunges through these fairly sort of nice looking gorges and stuff like that. Completely unexplained if you don't know the geology. But, we struck down 140 kilometres. There's a huge parrot here making a large amount of noise. Sorry about that at this point in time. I hope it hasn't seen me because they often pest you for food. Well, they'll look at you and call a couple of your friends. If you feed one, you'll just get heaps of them around. This is a female parrot's flying off somewhere. Okay, that's left. Okay, so we'll talk about, we went down to, a place called Nowra, a scout camp there. So there's still large amounts of land that the scouts, the church and the military have sort of large quantities of land. And this is on the Shoalhaven River. And a sort of fairly flat, bushy area where the people have canoes and old places. And from where we're at, went down our escarpment. So we're up on the escarpment, roughly 300 metres up. And within, say, 3 kilometres, you go down to 60 metres above sea level, and then we travelled on the flat country, flat floodplains, south, and struck the main highway, which is the arterial highway between Sydney and Melbourne. So Melbourne's the great southern city of Australia, and along the way, on that great arteria, you branch off and you can go down to a capital territory. Yeah, so we've got states in Australia, and we have it's a federation, so we have a non-partisan capital territory, which is called the Australian Capital Territory. It's about the size of Luxembourg. If you're in Europe, I don't know it's sort of bigger than Washington DC, possibly Rhode Island size area, 2,500 square kilometres, and a lot of it's mountain and wilderness, but inside there is cradled a bespoke designer city, so they've thoroughly researched the city, the geology and the mountains of it, and created a city, so wherever you look there's picture framed, picture perfect mountains and all views, it's all designed, so there's been nothing there, and they've looked around, surveyed at first and worked out exactly how to orient the city so it's all perfectly pitched. So it's a bit of an artificial sort of wonderland. That's Canberra, which we're going to. But first we're going off to Nowra. To go here, we've come down the plane, and this plane slowly arches up to coastal cliffs. And when I say this is hundreds of kilometres of cliffs, and the cliffs are all 150-metre, 200-metre drop down. So going along the back of it, along the arterial highway, and then you start to wind your way up this flat plain, which is slowly at an incline, and you come out at the city of Wollongong. So there's a series of coastal cities in Australia. South is Wollongong, then Sydney, then Newcastle. And these are relatively large cities, are sort of like satellite cities compared to so there's all this wildlife going around the place. This is an escarpment, so it's the escarpment's going up, and so going back out of the escarpment are these hidden valleys, and some of them have been flooded for dams. And one hidden valley is a place called Kangaroo Valley. So if you want to, you can go down, you descend right down this hidden valley, and it's full of nature and birds and wombats and all that type of stuff. And a little village at the bottom with artisan sort of pies and woodworks and stuff like that. And this valley, it's got this river, I think the Kangaroo River, Kangaroo Valley. And there's farms and stables along, and some of it's quite remote. It's in the middle of New South Wales. Just to give you a clue, a lot of the places were named after European places. So there's Wales, and there's a Captain Cook who came out here. We'll discuss him a bit later. The English navigator who came out here wanted to name something called South Wales in Canada. He came out and mapped the Lawrence Seaways, sort of significance to Britain because the War of Independence was coming along, but they needed good navigation control of the Great Lakes and all that type of stuff in America. They sent Captain Cook out, and he wanted to name a section of Canada. And it was already named South Wales, and he was a bit upset. So when he came off out to here, rather than just calling us area or being nominated South Wales, it was called New South Wales. Little story there. So what's happened is, if you can imagine one escarpment, we've come down it, travelled south, and angled up to the next escarpment. Of course, the next escarpment is this... The cliffs come down, and there's a flat area, and nestled in there is the city of Wollongong. There used to be large coal support, used to be steel mills, used to be a bit polluted. The pollution used to come out from Wollongong and hang over Sydney. And if you've been in Sydney and lived in the bottom of Sydney, and that you die, and they do an autopsy, they can see how long you've been in Sydney, or in that area, due to the, pool, it's the, steelworks. I think there is still some steelworks, but there's no longer the pollution. There used to be also a copper refinery, with these huge, chimneys, which would be seen forever. And, they've been taken down. And so it's all a very pleasant green area there. And there's, obviously, if you look out to sea, and you could see far enough, you could see right across the Tasman Ocean to New Zealand. But there are strong winds coming in. And this is important because as you go up further north from Wollongong, the land gets shorter and shorter until you actually are... cliffs go down to the sea, and on these cliffs are the original people, apparently the original people who invented hang gliders. But there's a lot of people, there's constant reliable wind, and there's hills where hang gliders are just going every day of the year. Hundreds and hundreds of people are hang gliding off these hills, and this a lot of the innovation, or apparently a lot of the innovation of hang gliding occurred at this hang gliding section. But you can go down here, and you go down the coast, and it widens out to a bit of a coastal plain, and you pass these volcanic outcrops, and there's a volcanic outcrop called Kaiama, and along the coastal plain. It's now the fastest way to go because they've bypassed every little hamlet and city along the way, bypassing. That's what in general has been happening in Australia the last 40 years. It's been building faster freeways down Australia, just bypassing everything. You can basically leave Melbourne and arrive in any other city without going through another one. Most things are bypassed. It's sort of this strange thing. You bypass this place called Kaima, and it's a volcanic outcrop. So there's been these volcanoes which has solidified the rock, so it hasn't eroded inland as much. And this little fishing village is out on this promontory, and the coast is eroded in an unusual way, creating blowholes. So as you go across on a good day, you can actually see this steam rising from a blowhole. This is the waves going into this sea cave, and a cave roof has collapsed, creating hole for which the air blows sufficiently fast and blows the water upwards. We go on very far, and then you meet the road down from Kangaroo Valley. So you go the sort of flat route up, or you can go down one of these complicated valleys and go down and up slightly. It's about 10 kilometres shorter and 10 minutes longer to go down these complicated ways. There's at the bottom of the valley is an old wooden bridge from hundreds of years ago, or 100 years ago, and that's the sort of slow point as you go through. And then when you hit this road from Kangaroo Valley, you start to go up it, and then quickly turn further south again, and it will take you to the campgrounds. And after that, you drop off your daughter and various things like that, and travel south to Nowra. So this is on the northern branches of the Shoalhaven River. You're down to the actual Nowra itself, and Nowra is a coastal, or not, sort of inland river port of Australia. It's hard to say. It's sort of local commercial center, local shopping centers and markets and stuff like that. And once you go through that, you start to head off inland. So it's roughly at this point still 200 and something odd kilometers to Canberra, but this time you're heading straight in. Obvious way to go if you want to drop someone off in Nowra first, or north of Nowra. And going in, the first thing you go in, you climb up a few hills, and you come to this amazing thing called the HMS, Her Majesty's Ship Inland, Albatross. And it is, in fact, Australia's only aircraft carrier. And it's, in fact, a huge slab of concrete in the ground, with an air base near it, and a little military base near it. Military base where we train the New South Wales paratroopers. So let's do, so Australia's got three army divisions, and there's sort of a training division with all the reserves in it. And there's basically, I think there's two regular tropical units and two parachute regiments, and I don't think anyone in the world ever parachutes anymore. It's sort of like an elite way to get people busy, I think, if you're at home. And so all the parachute people are very well, I don't see them around the place in general, but there are these parachute regiments. So I sort of used to see back in the day, many years ago, these parachute shooters in back of army traps, they'd be much bigger than, or much stronger than normal people, and things that should take us mere mortal soldiers two or three people that just lifted up as so it was nothing and just put it up, all super, super fit. So all sort of jogging along with these huge, absolutely heavy backpacks on, so it was just nothing. It's still mentally crazy to see him, but this going past this, you go past this, it's like a huge wire fence around it, probably a kilometre by kilometre, not less, something like that. The Albatross, and it's got the Fleet Air Arm Museum, so it's you get these pictures, although we haven't had, I think Australia's had two aircraft carriers in the 50s, 60s into 70s before they were sold for scrap for China. There were two aircraft carriers, the HMS Melbourne. When I say the two, they were ex-British aircraft carriers. One was sold to Argentina, and Argentina still had it in the Falkland Wars in the 1980s, and it just stayed in port. It didn't do anything, because it's apparently there is one thing that the aircraft carriers are fiendishly expensive to keep seaworthy. I think Russia has one aircraft carrier, which they've got in the Mediterranean off Syria, but it took an awful long time to get there, because it had to be carried by, had to be moved by tugboats, had to be moved from its Baltic port all the way around. I think it wasn't allowed to go through the English Channel, through there, and so it couldn't get away because it doesn't have full power. But Australia had these aircraft carriers, and I think by the 70s, by the Vietnam War, they were out of date and just used as cargo, carrying cargo. But we still nonetheless have a naval aircraft support, and a naval, and this Fleet Air Arm Museum, which has all the beautiful 60s and 70s propeller aircraft and submarine search planes, and a huge hangar as a museum there. The nose cone of Australia's last fighter bomber, which is the F-111. Australia kept flying well up past 2000. America had ditched it, I think, in the 70s. And so we kept on flying this aircraft. I think the last country in the world flying this particular swing wing fighter bomber aircraft, in a fairly impressive range. But when it used to fall apart, we would go scrounging around the junkyards of America, finding bits. America, of course, when they still have active aircraft that they've sold to other countries, they drag the old aircraft into the deserts. And Australia had obviously put a lot of research on how to keep airframes in the air much longer than they should. Eventually got rid of them, and you can see this, at least the nose cone, very famous nose cone of this aircraft, the F-111. There's a whole other things stacked in museums all over the place. A lot of famous aircraft there, and it's fairly quiet down. So you've got this base. So we drove past that. We've spent many. It's the sort of thing to do if you're holidaying in this area, to go up and see the Fleet Air Arm Museum. It's sort of a bit of a weird experience. And so we've proceeded there. Past that, didn't stop, and made our way up. We lost the navigation signal halfway across the I suppose it's wilderness and then farmlands, and so we lost our direct route to Canberra, and then made our way across to Goulburn and into Canberra. And what I'll do is describe, I think, what Canberra is. So Canberra is the administration, a political centre, an administrative centre of Australia. So we had a federation, and rather than vote that the capital should be in one of the major capital cities, this was decided to be in a neutral city, and in an alpine area. They surveyed it, won a competition, and they declared this entire region, some 2,500 square kilometres, a capital territory. Well, in fact, it was arranged so it had, that was the land area, and then there was another separate capital territory on the coast called Jervis Bay, this other bay, and which is a naval base, and that was going to be the port of of the Australian Capital Territory, and there's other very small areas which are federal land. They're not south. They're not state lands. I think the other national areas, there's a suburb, a large section in Sydney, which is for the nuclear reactor. But so for some reason, the nuclear reactors, things which are nuclear, have to be, and some research facilities are federal land. So you come across it, and there's a, in all these things, there's federal police guarding it, and they can restrict, you know, we don't need passports to go in. But in some cases, to go in, that they need to, their security areas. But this whole area in Australia is the Australian Capital Territory, the ACT, and there's about three other little enclaves. One a square kilometre here, 50 square kilometres elsewhere, sprinkled about Australia, which are owned by the federal government. They're not controlled by state laws. They're for the whole nation. So inside this place, you have, I was trying to remember, oh yeah, so we've got the Australian Capital, which has been built, designed in 1910, built in the 1920s, the central part of it, designed in the 1920s, and it's just expanded, sort of like this bacteria in a dish, and sort of going into a line and going to suburbs and expanding from central towns, from the out of it. So I'll describe there, so we visited our two daughters who are studying at the Australian National University. So, how would you describe it? If you had a plane, and so it's surrounded by mountains on either side. So coming up to it is a very large flat lake. For a plane, it's got no water in it. It used to have water in it when I was a kid. It's no longer got water in it. It's just a huge flat pasture land. And there's these ridges of hills and some mountains in the background. Occasionally the mountains have got dustings of snow. And there's this sort of large flat plane. It was a large flat station. And in the centre, in every round, are these extinct volcanoes. And they rise 100 metres, 200 metres, not 200 metres, generally between 100 and 200 metres of these mountains. And so these are, like if you have got a classic volcano, now forget the lava from the top, it's a volcanic stop. I must admit, when you look at it, you can't see any volcanic rock in the top. It's all sandstones. I don't quite understand the geology, but they are volcano shapes, like a conical hill, right? A conical hill, and in general, there's a spur. In fact, every mountain in ACT has pretty much, or sorry, in Canberra area has the same form, this mountain. So when you come in, there's sort of this basin area, and you drive into it from the ACT, drive from the north into Canberra, and the first thing you can see is this volcano. It's obviously no lava at the top. Trees on top of it. They have built a 1970s concrete spire with a revolving restaurant on it, and it's a 1970s perhaps eyesore called Black Mountain Tower. It's a huge telecommunication base, and it's back in the day before optical fiber, they had microwave repeaters. I don't know if they use the microwave repeaters for very much anymore. There used to be a microwave repeater station was very much the thing in Australia. So there used to be microwave repeater stations which would go straight across the country. This is right across Australia. So there'd be a system of towers which would go from Sydney all the way across to Perth. And at least in the old maps, they'd have these towers. I don't know whether they still have them. So back in the day, there was this technology. So that's one mountain. Then there's another mountain, Mount Ainslie. And, which is on the northern side of Canberra. And, so you've got Black Mountain, Mount Ainslie, and then there's another very small little mountain, which is the Capitol Hill Mountain. So we've put the Australian Parliament on top of this other volcano. And so you can look from one volcano across to another one, which is Mount Ainslie. And at the base of the mountain is the War Memorial. So you can see right across there. And then you can look further back, and there's a little mountain at the back of this, slightly higher, called Red Hill. And then there's a volcano still a little bit further south called Mount Stromlo. That's where the National Observatory used to be. So it's now absolutely killed by suburb lights. It used to be reasonably like them. So you've got all this series of things. And what they've done is they've struck a dam across the creek, built up the dam rather much, and created a huge dam. So Australia, and we call that dam a lake. We call it Lake Burley Griffin. And so everything's sort of like picture perfect. Like they had to work out how to build a picture perfect city. And so it's sort of strange and artificial. And on the lake is the university. And ostensibly you get a canoe and canoe anywhere. I often wanted to do that. I wanted to get onto another suburb and just get out a canoe and canoe in the morning. I don't know whether very many people do that. And so you have all these things. And I want to mention a few places and which are a bit unusual. So this is a 1920 city, and some of the sound planning has worked in an unusual way, because there's a satellite place and the communication the thought in the 1920s of someone in one suburb being able to drive to a shopping centre wasn't there. So there's a small little strip town centre. So it was sort of, and this has worked, so each suburb has a little shopping centre in it. And some of these have developed their own characters, and others have sort of very much imbibed the civil service concrete of it. It's got its own culture. And what I want to do is mention this place, which was really at the back of the main centre, commercial centre of Canberra. And this particular place really, really struck me, because this is where We went to, we were going on a walk, which I'll describe a bit later, and we went there to a bakery that my girls had found. And when I was there, I sort of remembered that there, from when I was there doing my PhD in the late 80s, when I was doing my PhD there, there used to be a few car repair shops down the street. And going down the street, there were now four-story apartment blocks. And one of the things that I did notice is that there was these sort of, in one building, it was unusual going up. And so the idea of this for me to describe, remember, and give a context, and I'll have someone listen back to it and actually give me some clue. So these are these large, in France they're called shutters, but these shutter in the whole balcony. And what they are these big metal, black folding things. And I suppose shutters is what you call them, but they shutter the entire front end. So if you want some privacy, you can actually move these shutters, and they're like two big articulated gates. So rather than just a gate, they're actually got a hinge in the center of it. So they're not the full length of the gate. So they're about, each one is about a quarter of the width at a quarter. So when folded out, it's a half, and folded across is a half. Folded out at 90 degrees, it's a quarter inwards, so you've got some privacy between each people and looking out. So that was an interesting thing to look up. And the place had, you know, like compared, like we had driven through some country towns and they were pretty dead and sparse, and this was all brimming with the wealthy public servants and various people who had lots of money, having coffees and buying these exotic, not exotic, but sort of bakery goods, pastry goods, coming across it. I walked across, and the roundabout there had this rather beautiful thing. It had the, what I recognised as the Gay Pride logo, because we've just had gay marriage allowed. And so this area, this roundabout, and how would I describe it? The actual roundabout, probably 30 metres across. This is not the road, this is the internal thing where you can walk on it. It's got a central light bulb, a sort of lamp in the centre, with a spiral fairy lights on the inside. And so one of the trees in this area had night lamps hinged onto it. So you'd look on a tree and there'd be a power section up to a fuse box on this tree, and out of the fuse box would come out these wires, and out of the wires would come to be a sort of a leather rubber sling, so the tree wouldn't be hurt, no hammering into the tree, and it would suspend these lamps and lanterns. And there was a lantern on the inside, a spiral night lighting, so you could see this is during the day that I saw it, a lot of light. But the actual flat pavement had these colouring, was coloured from indigo, Roy G. Biv, but the opposite of that one, violet on the outside to red on the inside. And it's a very, because it was so flat, it was a very sort of beautiful decoration, because often decorations in environments are three-dimensional, or they impose on it. They don't actually slot into your field of view. So I rather liked it. And then there was the old, service station, which was on the side, and that was converted to a hamburger shop, boutique hamburger shop for, late at night, and sort of rustic seats there, and sort of still had the flavour of the thing. It was called the Grease Monkey. And on the wall at the back, there was a picture of a monkey in overalls, and it was urinating over an arch, and the urine, this is just a chalk drawing, sort of on that style of graffiti, but chalk, and it would go down, and it landed in a big splashy puddle above the a drinking font, I thought, look, I'll try and remember that, which I have come across. So after that, we left this area. So the entire point of this area is that they've created this zone and precinct, I suppose it's what you'd call an LGBTQ, I think, what's it called? LGBTQ. I'll have to go over all the different things. So they actually created this atmospheric precinct, and there's these different precincts emerging in Canberra and in different parts of the city, the city of South Australia. There are these little micro precincts, and so that was, it was interesting to see that evolve as a distinctive precinct in Canberra, and sort of other areas with age disappear. So we went from there out to a village of Canberra called Hall. So it's actually not part of Canberra itself, it's a village. And Hall predates Canberra. And so what happened is that they had a convention, and within 10 years they had a program to identify where the capital should be built. So Australia was a series of colonies, British colonies, and they had a convention with New Zealand, which decided we'll be a separate country, and the rest of the states decided to get together, and they agreed on a law, and this group went around Australia looking at where they should place the capital. And when they placed the capital here, they surveyed it out. And when they did the survey, they said to everyone inside, you no longer, your property is dissolved. You no longer own your property. You may lease it, but you will have to move out, forcibly move out. And so there was, at that time in this area, around 1,600 people. And so some of the capital people, some of the station owners, so it was a large sheep station at that stage. Sort of, and if you can imagine, no sources of water. And now, as you look out over Canberra, there's all these lakes, it's sort of like a system of dams. Everything's got water in it. It's actually supported them. So we went out to Hall. So Hall is northwest of Canberra, and it's a little area. Now, the sort of money was very controlled, it flowed from all the states, and it was very important that no money went back to New South Wales. And so it was, you know, and so this little community was a little farming community, and really, really poorly. And it, I think until the 1990s, it still had dirt roads, and it didn't get electricity or sewerage till after World War II. No sewerage until the 1970s. It's a little complete, about a few thousand people sitting out there, and mostly farmers and labourers out there of Hall. And we drove out there, and obviously read a bit of the history, And there's a few plaques about these people being surprised when they were told that they thought they were in Australia, but they were told, look, you no longer go there. And these people had formed a system of land grants. So Australia was first colonised in 1788. They didn't cross outside Sydney till 1815, around that time. And then within 10 years, all of New South Wales had been broken up, and various people had been given leases and stuff like that of cattle country. And come the Federation, these people were told, look, your lease is dissolved. I don't care what it is, it's gone. But you know, we've written the laws. This is a new country now. And so these people were displaced and poor. And so you go off, and it's noticeably slightly different from Canberra. The streets are much, much more narrow, stuff like that. And going up to Hall is got One Tree Hill. Okay, it is a hill, but it's the tallest volcano in this basin. And now what's happened is that Canberra a few years ago was 100 years old. So what they've done is they've created a system of you can walk all the volcanoes, which we call them hills. And it takes about 3 days, and it's about 200 kilometres. I can't believe it's 200 kilometres, because that's an incredibly long distance. About well over 100 kilometres distance as you walk along. It takes three days to walk them all. And one of them is walking past this called One Tree Hill. And on top of it is it's a volcano, and it's of the same structure as all the other ones. That is, there's a central cone, and out of that cone comes little spurs. And this one, you walk up and zigzag this beautifully maintained path, and there's new technology that's different from what I've experienced before. So kind of, I don't know if you've in America and stuff like that, you have these boardwalks. Now they've just found that this steel plate with laser cut holes, the holes are about 4 millimeters by 4 millimeters with stuff. They just put this down, and it's fantastic stuff. And so you can walk across, and then there's, it's a little cattle area. So you walk over these cattle grids. So these are these interspaced square steel rods which go horizontally across, and the cattle's hooves can't get into them. They don't like it, so it can keep it out. And these gates. These gates are rather interesting because they have just a bit of a head, hip height, a gap, and you can duck. And what I saw a bike rider come up across. What they do is they hoe their bike over the top of it, and then they just push themselves through the gate like a postage, like letters into a postbox. They just slip through. And so there's a walk, and it's a very tough walk. It's 2 hours, 2.5 hours return up to the top of this hill. And when you go up to the top of the hill, there is a microwave repeater station up there, with little windows, and it's got a series of reverse cycle air conditioners on the outside of it, to keep the electronics correct there. And it's still reasonably used, and all the fences have been paid for by the ACT, and so they're all new new fences there, and that's to keep the horses. So you've got this sort of snaking corridor through private land, which allows you to snake in this way, allows you to go through the contour up, and then you zigzag up to the top of this place, and then you have a view. And from this view, you can see all of Canberra except for the mountain that I've described, which is called Capitol Hill. So you can't see, it's the one thing, the Black Mountain, which has got the original telecommunication tower on, it's got there, but you can see all the different suburbs. And what's happened is that now you can see Mount Stromlo, so further south is Mount Stromlo. So Mount Stromlo had all this pine forest around it, and had telescopes at the top of it. And because it was an observatory, what happened is it caught fire, and it being a volcano, very hot, and having pine plantations, it was just like this gigantic bonfire and just went right up. And fortunately, there may have been someone who died in it, but you go up to the top of Mount Stromlo now, and you can see still now these burnt out buildings and inside melted telescopes. And like, kid you not, you could go up to the top of it and you look through these burnt out shells of these burnt out observatories, and the structure of the telescope is melted with the intense heat of these fires. And one of the things about Mount Stromlo is that all the land around it has been cleared, and it's got suburbs rising around it. And similar tree, if this is One Tree Hill, you look out and you can see a new suburb being built with these two skyscrapers. They're 20, 30 story buildings, but what they've done is that they've carefully coloured the floors, so when you're looking at it, it doesn't look, you have to almost look twice. They're almost camouflaged in, so they've thought of how it would look from One Tree Hill. So from One Tree Hill you can see all the Australian Capital Territory to come across. And this has been my aim, to describe what it's like. So one of the things that I will do eventually, as I get back onto it, is with this, trying to augment it with Google Earth KMZ. So as I describe these places, one of the things that I'll do is go onto Google Earth. I can generate a KMZ file. It's just the temptation there to actually play forward. I've just got to work out the way to integrate a lot of things with it. So again, talking back with these podcasts, I've got to get my, this is just a warm-up podcast. I've had a few days off. A warm-up podcast on, to integrate some of the ideas coming forward. So there's a slightly different view from podcasting to get a larger audience, as opposed to podcasting for rehab. And I've got to do that rehab as the first one. One of the things I've realized in terms of writing up, having reviewed a Indian website company, and that they've used a color system and a way of structuring their sentences, which are they work very methodically and very well, and I'm very sensitive to that. I've got to actually transfer that across to my podcast writing up technology, such that I replicate that and cover that off. And one of the things I have to do is ensure that my recollection is good. So one of the things is, it may sound as though I'm recalling a lot, but there's many key aspects which I won't be able to recall of stuff. And so I'm just trying to think, that was a Monday, so that's recalled from 2 days, and that's a very interesting thing to go across. So I hope that you've been taken on a little bit of a journey into Central Australia. I think Canberra's 200 metres above sea level. I'll have to look on that. And so some of these things, they're not too high, they're not by any stretch of the imagination mountains as you would think of them in any country overseas, except perhaps Britain, which is a fairly flat and boring country, or Holland or something like that. But at least that's given you, well, if you want to listen to it, some sort of a thing. And for me, having to give it as a podcast focuses me to recall and describe it all. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.